It's always a pleasure to come to these conferences. I was talking to someone earlier, and I think of these more not so much as conferences as more support groups. You know, it's like, hi, I'm Mike, I'm building a registry. It's just like, yes, we understand. You know, you feel better afterwards after a year getting beat up back at the office. So actually, I had like two or three presentations to do under one title. And actually, I was going to do one about our vital records and the rules we had to change for that. And then I understand a lot of this was going to be dealing with HL7. So I made some changes, but if time allows, I may present some of the information I had about our vital records. I do want to make some acknowledgments as to who helped with this presentation. Some are in the audience, and I want to thank them, and others couldn't make the conference, which is unfortunate. And I do want to start off by correcting something that was said earlier in the plenary. It is always about the registry. Okay? Let's be honest here. They work off from information we have, and we're the cornerstone of what the things are going to go on from.
You can stop right there, Mike.
Thank you. So hopefully what you'll get today is from the experience we've had in New York was how data exchange varied between some of the partners that were using the implementation guide. Although it's one document, the interpretation may lead some leeway still as to what happens. Also, the impact on the quality of the data and the impact on the users when this happens. And also, we have a few suggestions for additional measures you may want to take as you pursue getting an increase in data quality for your exchanges. A little background about what's been going on in New York. I have been involved with over 10 years with the registry, and even before that, we started back at the beginning in 93 when the funding was allowed. In 94 was when in New York State, as opposed to developing a centralized application, we took the money and distributed it across the regions in New York State to see if they could develop regional registries to meet their specific needs. This was going to be connected through what we called the state hub. That was going to be a central point where the information would flow to, and we would be basically the post office to go between the local registries for the statewide exchange. The guidelines they had to work from was it was a informed consent. You had to opt into the registry, and that there had to be voluntary participation by the provider to want to go in and participate with the system. After 10 years, we took some time to do an independent assessment to see where we were and what we would have to do to try to reach the 2010 goal. And it really wasn't any surprise that we had to change the way we were doing things in New York, and that we needed to move to a web-based application. The fact was, the original applications that were developed in 94, the availability of the internet wasn't there, the reliability wasn't there, so really what was developed was software that was installed locally. The actual data was stored locally on providers' machines where only the consented information would flow up to the state, because with our laws, we could not even hold the non-consented data centrally. That had to stay locally in the provider's office. So the recommendation came, and as swift as state bureaucracy can happen, 3 years later, we went forward and adopted the Wisconsin application, which had proven itself as a good application which other states had adopted. They had something sophisticated, it was working well in a lot of states, and we also hired EDS to be the vendor to work with us to meet some of the New York State specific requirements. There was some tweaking, as you always have to do with these applications, to meet our specific needs. Also in 2006, we were fortunate to have legislation. That really changed the constraint of being an opt-in and voluntary participation into mandatory reporting, and that was to start in 2008. And I say that was important because one thing we found as we moved forward was the participation we had from the existing users, they were withholding probably two-thirds of their data from our registry because they didn't want to bother getting consents. So where we were looking at our, and I'll show you our rates later for those years, were really low. The fact was what we had was doing better than we thought because they didn't want to bother with consent. So the legislation and the new application came along, were approved in 2006. In 2007, we began to migrate the data we had in our hub to the new system. And in 2008, we opened the doors. The floodgates let loose and the data started flowing. Not only did we have the web application with the user interface, but the data exchange was available to the providers. And we also linked to vital records, and I neglected to mention that the legislation specifically included that we could link with vital records retrospectively to 2004. Prior to this, we had no link. We really didn't know our population base. This allowed us to really have the population that we would need for the 2010 goal. The data exchange was something I was surprised, and you'll see how well that flourished so quickly in our first year. The beauty of taking the Wisconsin application, and I do have to give credit to Tom and the Wisconsin team for what they developed, of which I believe Rob was a part of at the beginning, had in place already the HL7 and a flat file specification, so we were really ready to go when we had the application, and we could start embracing those vendors who we thought maybe a few vendors would be in a position to start doing the exchange. But as I said, let me share with you how excited we are with what's going on in New York. The past few years, what's been going on in terms of what we had to report in the annual to CDC, the yellow line is just my population base for what we had in our registry for those less than 6 and over 4 months of age. And then the number of children, 2 or more shots. And these are the standards that we have in the annual report. Just since 2007, we've jumped right up. We've over doubled our saturation rate for the 2 or more shots. The vital records load, which we took 600,000 records and loaded fundamentally over 2 nights. It just processed so quickly in our system. We pretty much have a population-based system right now, and it's really been great. I mean, this is incrementally over the past 12 months what we've been dealing with in terms of how fast our growth has been through both the user interface and through the data exchange. We're at the point now where in the course of a year, we're up to over 2 million patients and over 20 million shots. We do have right now that over 50% of the population of our information is coming in from the data exchange, which really shocked me. I mean, this is since January 2009, and that's, I really want to get away from 2008 information, because the migration we use was primarily from our hub, and we use HL7 messages, so that would have skewed what we presented here. So this better represents how important and how much is going on. Now the new patients, you can see there's a portion, 18% of new patients come in from vital records. We have daily loads coming in, and what we're finding is we're getting within 14 days, 90% of the births are in our registry within 14 days. So that's a daily feed that we're getting from to show our new patients, and then still 59% are coming from data exchange. We do have the birth dose given, but that's not really represented in the updated immunizations yet because we didn't have that indicator, but we will be including it. So overall, we're pretty happy with the progress that the pie charts show. So the very few vendors that we thought we'd have, in fact, we have 25 vendors with over 189 private practices already sending data to us in the first 12 months of this system being up. 66% are using HL7. I expected, considering this was something new in New York, how fast they would ramp up and meet the charge of data exchange, that, you know, if I had a third or a quarter of that number, I'd be ecstatic. But to have that many organizations in place, but I have to give credit to the other states that have already blazed a trail. I'm seeing names of organizations that are in other states. There's eClinical, there's GE Centricity, people that already have systems in other registries. So I want to thank you for making the grounds of getting these vendors on board so they can start working with me, which is what the goal of that implementation guide was to be in the first place. Get the vendors on board and start working with them with registries so they could work with other states and get other states up and running. So we already have another 80 vendors that already have our implementation guide that are starting to review and prepare information for us, and we'll go through the whole process of getting them certified and into our system. So we're very ecstatic with how well and how fast this has moved throughout New York State. Now there is a range of data exchange providers that you'll run into out there that we've seen already among the one we've dealt with. Now you have the experts. And the experts, in terms of the good news, is they know how to make an HL7 message. They actually know what the H and the L means in the HL7, too. So you're way above board with that. The bad news is they might have jumped the gun and started writing message independent of the implementation guide. And I won't speak about the fact, well, I will speak about the fact, there is some technical arrogance sometimes that they know better than you, that they're professionals in this field, they're IT professionals, and they know HL7 much better, and they attend the conferences and all that stuff. But you can work with them, and they can pretty much come up to speed. The other group are the novices. And the good news is they work right from the guide. They don't know where to go. They're going to come knocking on your door. You don't have to worry about them coming to you with something that's not going to work at all and then having to tell them, well, start over again. No, they're going to call you and say, what do I have to do? I really want to get forward. And a lot of times they're sincere. They're looking ahead for their own application to say, I know there's going to be certification. I know there's national standards. This might be the inroad I need and a way to get going to get me in a better position for my product. The bad news is they need the 101. They don't know the H and the L. They require a lot of hand-holding, but it's time well spent if you can do it as best you can. And obviously, the caveat with all this is with the resources you have. There's a range of resources each project has available to work with these vendors. And as best you can, if you can work with them and get on their side, they're part of your team. Because the underlying thing, the subliminal message here is to be cooperative, to have a partnership, to be part of the vendor community as they work with you, and down the road, work with the provider too who's going to buy that product. Now, the big problem in most registries when you deal with data exchange is data quality, and I want to put a plug out for what MIRO has been doing. The data quality white paper is an excellent guide. If you haven't read it, you should review it. And actually, it sounds like Kansas might have followed it. They have the big pre-certification, pre-loading, and validation of existing data as some of the big guidelines out there. A lot more details out there, and like I said, take a look, business rules, it's well worth the time. And we follow most of those steps also in New York State. The system we got allows us to do the pre-certification, we can test the message, and we go forward. But I want to point out that we do it in two different ways. We do it once with the vendor, because they have to do it first before they even give it to their provider. But then we're going to do it a second time when that provider actually starts sending data from that office. Because we are finding differences in what happens with a vendor who may be more technically sophisticated and may have test data created for this specific purpose than when you get to the provider office and is dealing with real world data and what they have to send to you. And there can be a difference in what goes on. So it's well worth doing this process twice, even though it's the same application. But one thing I did in the bulk of my presentation here, in the few slides that I've got left, will be we found things that sort of slipped through the cracks. The stuff that they, you know, you didn't think to test for, but maybe you should think about. And so we want to consider and suggest that you might want to have test scenarios specific to your certification and pre-certification process. And here's what we face in New York State that happened to us in this past year. And this is the misreported CPT codes. We had one vendor that mapped all the TD preservative free to 90714, regardless of date. Okay? As most of you know, that was a reissued CPT code. So in fact, prior to July 1st, it should have been typhoid. So on their system, really all that happened was the provider would see on the screen what they selected, TD preservative free, which behind the screen was mapped to a CPT code. They don't know. The vendor wasn't paying attention, there's a date. Well, of course, our system gets it. In the test messages, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a valid CPT code, it's a valid date. I don't know what the original system was. Now, I will say, as quickly these presentations change, I already heard a suggestion at a lunchtime session for the technical group, processes that I think it was Indiana was doing, where they're actually having the vendors look on the screen and compare what's on their native system to what ends up on the registry. We weren't fortunate enough to think that far ahead, but what did happen here was the provider finally got on our system and said, hey, that's not what I sent you. What are you doing? So we had to go back and work with the vendor and actually work with their logic. So what we're proposing now is in our test scenario with vendors to say, you specifically have to include these two type of messages. I want to send a TD preservative free, and I want to typhoid with these specific dates to make sure you're processing it correctly, and we'll see how it ends up on the other end. The other instance we had, and this is a little strange, was a misreported date of death. Now, date of death is not necessarily a, quote, required field. And that was where we maybe didn't test it as strenuously as we should have in the pre-certification process. The same vendor, and I'll just put a little note here, unfortunately it was one of the most popular vendors in New York State, so the volume of bad records we got was horrific. The same vendor was recording a valid date in the date of death field for any change of status. So if the provider, if the patient just sort of was no longer active for that practice, they took the date that they changed the status field and populated the date of death. So once again, we finally found that because technically in the HL7 guide, you do have your status field of being active, inactive, and we have permanently inactive deceased. You have your date of death field, but there is an indicator also in the HL7 that says this person is deceased, and we found out about that after the fact. But the point was, because it was optional, because the frequency of date of death fields or death indicators coming through, we didn't include it in the test scenarios. And that's something we want to go forward and do. Again, in the pre-certification, make sure they send us a record of someone that is deceased. Have one record that come in and then send an update that comes through that says the child's now deceased to make sure it's being processed. So you may need more than just one test file, have subsequent test files to come in to see how updates are handled. And this is a tricky one because it goes to how much effort do you really have to do things and you know, again, the resources you have available to you to raise the level of quality. We have our required fields and mandatory fields we have to have in the system, but there's a whole host of the optional fields that go on here. In one case, we had a scenario where they wanted to provide the dose amount, which is not a required field, I think it was. But in HL7, what was happening was they weren't positioning it, and this is one of the novices, because of those of you familiar, you know, you have to be very specific into what segment and what field you put something. You put a hash mark in the wrong place and everything gets shifted once, and if all of a sudden that's in a field you wouldn't have looked at, you ignore it. That's the HL7 rule. If it's not something that you are looking for, you ignore. So what this goes to is completeness of information. The provider may be offering a lot more information to you, but the fact is you're not picking up because it got missed in the field and you're not doing a lot of tests on your optional fields. So you're losing information that could be more complete, but it's not required. So you have to decide for yourself this balance of how much effort do you want to place in this information. Now, this may go to customer support. They may have an expectation of seeing exactly what they send, and you have to balance that. But it is an optional field, and it's a curious part that how much can you really attend to it? And I really want to talk more about the provider being in the middle. And this is, I think, an important point that we all deal with, because that's who we end up talking to a lot of the time in the day-to-day, not so much the vendor. You got to remember here, the provider buys the software from a vendor with the IAS capability, okay? So they bought it. But the fact is, day-to-day, it's the vendor, it's the provider that's sending the information, but they may not have the expertise. And we've had situations already where they buy it from the vendor. It's almost buyer beware, which is kind of scary. The vendor gets the application, the provider gets the application, but doesn't know enough about what they have to do to really work with the registry. And there's a part that you own with how to get information in, but there's still a part you don't own, but you might want to help them with. Are there defaults they have to set? And these are things you might want to take the time to learn when you're doing the pre-certification. That's why I said you certify not only the vendor at the beginning and try to understand the defaults that they're going to tell their customers. You also work with that vendor when they start sending their file to make sure those defaults are set correctly, to understand what's coming from them. They've made the adjustments. So you do have to do more homework to understand, okay, this provider, he's using this software, and this is what I might have to do to work with them to make sure the information is adjusted the right way? And are they sending the right records? I have to laugh here. We've had several instances where the provider, once we start doing it and we weren't careful enough to review, we did the pre-certification with them, everything was fine, they sent their test file, it came time for production, and with the first load of production, they sent their test file again. So we have a lot of Mickey Mouses in our system that we have to clean up, and Minnie Mouses. But what's, you gotta catch here, the problem leads to the frustration of the provider. The provider, as I said before, they're gonna see what's on their software, they're gonna see what they expect, and then they're gonna look on your application and say, it's not what I'm seeing on my screen. That's where you wanna act as a mediator, and this is where you can gain some important credibility. And I'm out of time, but I'm just about there, Rob. So I'll be short in just saying, look, you wanna be a mediator, you wanna work back and forth, and try to not only solve the problem, but once again, create that relationship you need to be a good person. So in exchange, think about the pre-certification. You want to cover less common events. You might actually have to open a record and eyeball it for some of those optional fields to make sure the delimiters are there, that there isn't information missing that you're not accepting. Work with the providers and work with them better. And why do you want to take the extra effort? Because there's nothing uglier than bad data exchange. Thank you.